It's lovely to welcome you to chapel this morning. It's always great to get together to praise God, to worship Him, and to hear His word. So we just hope that all can happen this morning. So our psalm to begin with is Psalm 56, verses 3 to 6. And shall we just read this together? When I am afraid, I put my trust in you, in God whose word I praise. In God I trust, and I'm not afraid. What can mere mortals do to me? All day long they twist my words. All their schemes are for my ruin. They conspire, they lurk, and they watch my steps, hoping to take my life. Okay, so I believe this was a psalm that David wrote. And, you know, he was afraid. He had enemies out there, real enemies who were attacking him. And but he knew where to go. He knew what to do. And he would pray to God. When I'm afraid, I put my trust in you. And so, yeah, that's one of our memory verses from a while back in it. When I am afraid, I will trust in you. Psalm 56, verse 3. So our theme this morning is all about prayer. And we'll be looking at Nehemiah. And so that'll be good. So let's just pray now at the beginning of our meeting. Thank you. So Nehemiah was a praying man, so it's very fitting that he was saying there he believed in the power of prayer because of his experience on the mission field that he knew of personally. So, books of the Bible slide. We're coming towards the end of the Old Testament. We've got one more book to go, so we're into Nehemiah today, and so we're right near the end of the Old Testament. Our timeline will illustrate that as well. And we see Nehemiah coming in across there, right to the bouncing on the edge and just hanging on in before Malachi. So, Nehemiah. Who was the shortest man in the Bible? Does anybody know the shortest man in the Bible?
Bildad the shoe height.
Well, it might not have been.
Jeff, that's what you told us when you did Job.
But there was Peter, who slept on his watch. I must have omitted to tell you, so I apologise profusely. Zacchaeus was a very little man. Nehemiah was not that tall either.
But he was taller than Shuhite.
Taller than Bildad the Shuhite. But yes, so there we go. Right then, walk through the Bible. So we've got nearly to the end. Our sign for Nehemiah, we touch our knees because he's knee-high, and then we build the walls up and say walls. Nehemiah, walls. Okay, so let's just run through our signs very quickly. And we go, creation, fall, flood, nations, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Passover, law, tabernacle, offerings and feasts, counting, spying, wandering, dying, second law. Joshua, divide and conquer, 12 tribes, judges, Deborah, Gideon, Samson, loving Ruth, Samuel, United Kingdom, Saul, no heart, David, whole heart, Solomon, half heart, divided kingdom, mostly bad kings, prophets speak, Israel scattered, Judah exiled, Judah returned, Zerubbabel temple, Esther queen, Ezra people, Nehemiah wars. And we've got one more to go next. The end of the month or beginning of September. So if we can have our first read in Nehemiah 1 verses 1 to 4, please. And there's a few not so easy words to say. So who's game? Brian, you're always game for that, aren't you? Well done, thank you.
These are the memoirs of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. In late autumn, in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was in the fortress of Susa. Hanani, one of my brothers, came to visit me with some other men who had just arrived from Judah. I asked them about news about the Jews who had returned from captivity and about how things were going in Jerusalem. They said to me, "Things are not going well for those who have returned to the province of Judah. They're in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem has been torn down, and the gates have been destroyed by fire." When I heard this, I sat down and wept. In fact, for days I mourned, fasted, and prayed to the God of heaven.
Thank you. And so here we see Nehemiah, a real man, with his father's listed there, Hakaliah. And Nehemiah came on the scene around 140 years after Judah exiled. So they were exiled for 70 years. They came back, Judah returned, another 70 years, and we have Nehemiah on the scene. So he's a real man, real time. They give us a date there. It's probably November, December 446 BC, and a real place in the fortress of Susa. Okay, so if we remember our map in the room, we've got Israel in the middle here. And then way over there, we've got Persian Gulf with the two main rivers, Euphrates and Tigris, coming up here. And Susa was on, I think it's a Euphrates. Way down there near the Persian Gulf. And so a long way from Israel. In fact, it's not far from Basra in Iraq today, similar place. So real man in real time and a real place where we can find today. Now, it's probably his great-grandparents lived in Israel and were taken away with Judah exile. So he was many generations from living in Israel. But Israel, and Jerusalem in particular, was in his heart. You know, he was really... that was where his heart was. That was where he wanted to be. It seemed his relationship was back there with God. You know, Nehemiah had a very strong relationship with God, even though he was living hundreds and hundreds of miles away from the land of Israel. And he hears this thing from his friend that the walls are down, the city is vulnerable to attack, and he is devastated. He sat down and he wept and he mourned for days and days on end. And it's amazing to me that he was still following the God of Israel, even though, you know, it's probably his great grandparents that was the last in his family to live there. And but he was following the law of Moses as well. And so if we read on Nehemiah 1, verses 5 to 11, we see what Nehemiah does next, because he prays and we can read his prayer here in the Bible. Would somebody like to read Nehemiah's prayer? Anybody? No. We are.
Then I said, "O Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of unfailing love with those who love him and obey his commands. Listen to my prayer. Look down and see me praying night and day for your people Israel. I confess that we have sinned against you. Yes, even my own family and I have sinned. We have sinned terribly, by not obeying the commands, decrees, and regulations that you gave us through your servant Moses. Please remember what you told your servant Moses. If you are unfaithful to me, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and obey my commands and live by them, then even if you are exiled to the ends of the earth, I will bring you back to the place I have chosen for my name to be honored. The people you rescued by your great power and strong hand are your servants. O Lord, please hear my prayer. Listen to the prayers of those of us who delight in honouring you. Please grant me success today by making the king favourable to me. Put it into his heart to be kind to me. In those days, I was the king's cupbearer."
Thank you, Aaron. So we see Nehemiah here, and he's first instance of we have that he's praying here. And this is almost a model prayer, I think, in many respects. He starts off in verse 5 by worshipping God. He says how great God is, how big God is. And he's very conscious of that. And then he says, listen to my prayer. Then he confesses his sin of not being able to keep the law of Moses as he should. But Nehemiah knows his history. He knows about the prophets coming to speak to the people, or they're going to be scattered. And he knows they get taken away and then come back. You know, he knows all this stuff. It's not something foreign to him. He knows what God has done in his history. And he says, we are now your servants. Show us, Lord. And he says, hear my prayer, Lord, and make the king favorable to me. Nehemiah was a cupbearer to the king, so he's quite a position. You know, he had the king's life at times would have depended on him doing a good job. They know if Nehemiah kills over, the wine's dodgy wine and the king's not going to drink it. But Nehemiah also knows that his position says that he must not go to the king sad. You know, the king don't want a sad people around him. He wants ones with smiles on their faces because they look happier. So there's several months Nehemiah's in this state. He knows what's going on in Jerusalem. Stuff's going on in his head, but he can't show it in his job. And until that is, we get to our next reading. But before that, we got a memory verse, which says, should we say this together? Rejoice in hope, patient in tribulation, continue steadfastly in prayer. Romans 12, verse 12. And I believe this is what Nehemiah was doing. He was continuing in prayer. He had this deep sadness in him that Jerusalem was all fell apart. There was a temple there, but no walls around it. And Nehemiah was kind of in turmoil. So I read in now Nehemiah 2, verses 1 to 6. Can I have somebody else for this one, please? Thank you, Selena.
Early the following spring in the month of Nisan, during the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was serving the king his wine. I had never before appeared sad in his presence. So the king asked me, why are you looking so sad? You don't look sick to me. You must be deeply troubled. Then I was terrified, but I replied, long live the king. How can I not be sad? For the city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins, and the gates have been destroyed by fire. The king asked, well, how can I help you? And with a prayer to the God of heaven, I replied, if it please the king, and if you are pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild the city where my ancestors are buried. The king and the queen sitting beside him asked, how long will you be gone? When will you return? After I told him how long I would be gone, the king agreed to my request.
And so Nehemiah appears with a sad face in front of the king, and the king notices. He says, what's wrong with you? Nehemiah's response was that he was terrified. Oh no, I've just broken the first law of serving the king with being sad. You know, what's going to happen next? He's terrified. And do you know, there's all this stuff going on in his head, and it eventually got to him that he couldn't keep that smile on his face in front of the king. And now the king had found out. Nehemiah is terrified. But you know, there's those moments in life when we have to get things right. Could be all types of moments. You know, we could be playing sport, playing football. Somebody passes us the ball. We're running to the goal. It's just me and the goalie. And we've just got to get that ball straight in, you know, and we will be a star the rest of our lives. Could be other stuff. You know, we could be on the edge of the gym mat about to do all these somersaults and everything, you know, and there's 2 seconds of flipping along, and that will seal your fate. Could be relationship. You know, you actually got your eye on somebody, and then all of a sudden you're alone with them, And you have to think of some sort of way of saying, will you marry me? Could be a medical emergency. You know, you could have dialed 999 and then you've got to stop the bleeding of this person. And it's only you there. You know, you've only got a few moments to do this. How are you going to cope? A job opportunity could come your way. Or somebody could say to you, how can I be a Christian? You know? And it's those moments when we say, well, there's lots of people that could tell you how to be a Christian, but they're not here. So you have to answer that question. You know, there's just this moment in time when you have to find those words and get it right. This was Nehemiah's moment. He'd been sad and praying for 6 months or so. Now the king asked him, why are you sad? Nehemiah's wondering, is God going to answer my prayer right here and now? What can I say? Am I in trouble with the king for being sad? Will I lose my job, my life? But Nehemiah answered the king. And I think it's always good to answer the question we're asked. And if it's an impossible one, we can say perhaps we can't answer it. We don't want to answer it. But at least be honest about whether we're going to answer the question. But the king, so Nehemiah told the king his problem. The walls around Jerusalem are down. The place is vulnerable. And the king replied, how can I help you? I imagine that was a bit of a surprise, a very pleasant surprise for Nehemiah. How can I help you, says the king. But right now in verse 5, Nehemiah is convinced he's out of his depth. You know, so what does Nehemiah do? He prays. Nehemiah prays. Says, with a prayer, I told the king, with a prayer to the God of heaven, I replied. And so Nehemiah prays. He's right at this moment. Nehemiah is in the right place with the right guy, and now he needs the right words. You know what, we were traveling about 20 years ago, I expect. We were traveling to the Scilly Isles, our family, and a few days earlier Esther had broken her arm, so it was decided, because of hospital appointments and whatever, that she and Jill would stay behind. So I jump in the van with the other three and off we go to Penzance and Land's End, jump on a little 8-seater airplane, fly to the Scilly Isles, St Mary's, and then we have to take a taxi. And then we have to get on a boat to go to St. Martin's. And then I realise I have no money. I left my money in the van, which is at Land's End. What am I going to do? I look at the kids and I say, I've left the money back there in the van. I know exactly where it is. It's on the seat behind the driver's. And there it is. And we need some money. This was sort of late-ish Saturday afternoon. And Simeon said straight away, he said, we must pray. And my thought went, well, you know, are we going to kneel down here? Are we going to, how are we going to do this? But as he said that, the pilot actually walked past us. And I thought, this is my moment. And so I shared my problem with the pilot. You know, in an 8-seater plane, you know who your pilot is. You can have a personal relationship. And I told him, you know, my money's back there. I ain't got no money. And he said, tell you what, give me your keys. Tell me what car you got. I've got one more flight. I'll go and get it for you. You just wait here and I'll bring your money to you. And so I handed over my keys. The van wasn't much good anyway. So and what was I going to do? And so that prayer didn't even get spoken. But my son's faith in God, who hears and knows our requests even before we utter them, was enough. And God answered that unspoken prayer. Nehemiah prayed, and the king gave him all he needed. Letters of authority to various officials, an army escort, letters to buy materials. And Nehemiah was given it all to him by the king. And he says in verse 8, because the gracious hand of God was on me. God was answering his prayers. And so Nehemiah knew things were moving now. He'd had all those months of stuff going on in his head. You know, this is, how are we going to cope with this? So our next reading is, we've got Nehemiah's got to Jerusalem now. I'm going to show you a map after this reading of how he gets there. But Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 16 to 20. Have we got a reader, please? Somebody here, perhaps?
The city officials did not know I had been out there or what I was doing, for I had not yet said anything to anyone about my plans. I had not yet spoken to the Jewish leaders, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or anyone else in the administration. But now I said to them, "You know very well what trouble we are in Jerusalem. Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been destroyed by fire. Let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and end this disgrace." Then I told them about how the gracious hand of God had been on me, and about my conversation with the king. They replied at once, "Yes, let's rebuild the wall." So they began the good work. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, the Arab, heard of our plan, they scoffed contemptuously. "What are you doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" they asked. I replied, "The God of heaven will help us succeed. We, his servants, will start rebuilding this wall. But you have no share, legal right, or historic claim in Jerusalem."
Thank you, Rosemary. So Nehemiah's in Jerusalem now. If we have our map now, Jill, please, and we will see. So we see the dotted line. He had a long way to go. It's probably 1,000 miles. Loads of people came with him, 50-odd thousand people. And so it would have taken 2 or 4 months, I imagine, somewhere between that time, because you can't travel very fast with all those people. So the blue at the where he started from is Persian Gulf, and then he goes, so he comes up from that way all around and then back down into Israel. A long way. But he needed help. He couldn't build all these walls on his own. He had to gather a team together. He'd surveyed the walls in the middle of the night. He was a bit nervous, it seemed. He went out in the middle of the night. But now he needs help. He needs to gather a team. And I reckon that if he'd had our next hymn, which is 7, 6, 9, he would have been singing this, shouting it even, as he went round trying to gather a team. Who is on the Lord's side? Who will serve the king? Who will be his helpers, other lives to bring? Who will leave the world's side? Who will face the foe? Okay, so we got another reading now. Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 1 to 6. Nehemiah 4, 1 to 6. You up for this, Jill? Thank you.
Sanballat was very angry when he learned that we were rebuilding the wall. He flew into a rage and mocked the Jews, saying in front of his friends and the Samaritan army officers, "What does this bunch of poor, feeble Jews think they're doing? Do they think they can build the wall in a single day just by offering a few sacrifices? Do they actually think they can make something of stones from a rubbish heap, and charred ones at that?" Tobiah the Ammonite, who was standing beside him, remarked, "That stone wall would collapse if even a fox walked on top of it." Then I prayed, "Hear us, O God, for we are being mocked. May their scoffing fall back on their own heads, and may they themselves become captives in a foreign land. Do not ignore their guilt. Do not blot out their sins, for they've provoked you to anger here in front of the builders." At last the wall was completed to half its height around the entire city, for the people had worked with enthusiasm.
Thank you. So there's that little line there about may they themselves become captives in a foreign land. That might have developed because these people who were opposing him had not been taken captive away. They were ones, I think, who had stayed in Israel and who became the Samaritans. And they were opposing this rebuilding of the walls around Jerusalem. They didn't want the walls rebuilt. They wanted Jerusalem to remain vulnerable for some reason, which is not particularly clear. But you know what? There can be people around us who want us vulnerable, who want to stop us from doing God's work. The devil doesn't want us doing it either. He will use all sorts of ways, all sorts of people, all sorts of influences to stop us from doing God's work. And so we got a memory verse. Anybody think of a memory verse? Oh, he's come up now. should we say this? Be alert, be on watch. Your enemy, the devil, roams around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. 1 Peter 5, verse 8. So we need to be on the watch when we're doing God's work. So what's the answer to this problem of this enemy, the devil, roaming around like a roaring lion? Another memory verse? Submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Thank you, Bruce. We say this one. Submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. James 4, 7. God is more powerful than Satan. So Satan has to bow down to God. And Jesus has the victory over Satan. You know, when we do God's work, we too have the victory over Satan. Nehemiah prayed and used all the resources he could find to carry on building. Whenever he had a problem, he prayed. And if you read the whole thing, you know, these people come along and they badger him. And he goes off and he prays. And God is with him. God helps him. And what an example to us is this, that Nehemiah continued to pray all through this thing of building the walls around Jerusalem. So we've got one more reading here, Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 15 to 16. Just a very few short, Bridget. Thank you.
So on October the 2nd, the wall was finished, just 52 days after we had begun. When our enemies and the surrounding nations heard about it, they were frightened and humiliated. They realized this work had been done with the help of our God.
Thank you. And that's amazing, isn't it? Those enemies knew that God had helped Nehemiah and all the other people in building the walls of Jerusalem. It was so obvious because they shouldn't have been able to do it. 52 days later, the job was done. Probably a couple of miles of wall built. It's huge. But they succeeded because God was with them. And Nehemiah, as it were, kept God informed. God knew anyway, but he kept praying to God all the time. And so the walls were built and the people confessed their sins and agreed to keep the law of Moses. And so then if we look on, that's kind of the main thing of Nehemiah's life that we remember. But if we look on through the rest of the book of Nehemiah, we find chapter 7. There's a whole long list of the people who come back with him. It's numbered at 42,360 plus 7,337 servants plus 245 singers. You know, it's all listed down, you know. I mean, it's incredible evidence for the thing that actually happened. Chapter 8, we meet Ezra again, and he's teaching the law of Moses. Ezra the priest, the scribe, he's there teaching the law of Moses to the people. And he reads and teaches the law, and the people realize how far they've fallen from following God. And they cry and they weep. But Nehemiah says to them in chapter 8, verse 10, I think, he says, "Don't weep, for the joy of the Lord is your strength." The joy of the Lord. He says, now is a time for celebration. And so they celebrate the festival of shelters, which was a reminder of the people coming out of the land of Israel. When they had to live in the wilderness, they lived in their shelters, their tents or whatever, and now they re-establish this feast of celebrating how God looked after them. And then a couple weeks after that, the people go on and they confess their sins once more and remember their history, and they pray to God and they promise to keep the law of Moses. But chapters 11 and 12 gives us more lists of people there who settle in Jerusalem. Chapter 13 is Nehemiah trying to get the people back on track because they've not managed to keep the law of Moses. After promising just a little bit earlier that they were going to keep it, they've struggled again. But I was just thinking, the joy of the Lord is your strength. It tells us to look to the Lord for strength and not ourselves. You know, we saw that video of Ken Elliott just now. You know, I can't believe that he didn't have this verse come to his mind in that time of 7 years captivity. You know, the joy of the Lord is your strength. Your strength doesn't come from yourself. It's got to come from God. And, you know, his case was hopeless, wasn't it? You know, his captors were around him. He couldn't get out. He could only look to God. And what a blessing that he had memorized all that scripture that he could dwell on and be encouraged by in those very dark days. So let's follow Nehemiah's example by taking everything to God in prayer. Our next hymn is encouraging us to do that. What a friend we have in Jesus, all our sins and griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to God in prayer.